Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
And we stand at a moment in 2021 in which we are once again imagining what the future of Eugene and our region could be. And that's why we're proud to kick off our City Club season today.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene September 10th, 2021 program. Glad to have you all here. This is called Visions for Post-Pandemic Eugene, part one of the Next Normal series. This is first program of our 2021-22 programming year. I'm Kitty Piercy, and I'm the club president. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Our programs are always available on YouTube channel and on our Facebook page. We also have a podcast available on Podbean, and programs are broadcast on public radio station KLCC 89.7. In today's program, we welcome Lily Reynolds Parker, civil rights activist and educator, Vera Keller, associate professor of history, University of Oregon, and Joel Iboa of the Oregon Just Transition Alliance. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I would like to thank Andrew Kallick for coordinating today's program, Visions for Post-Pandemic Eugene, part of our The Next Normal series. In recent months, thought leaders across the political spectrum and across industry, academia, have begun to discuss the what some call new normal, a post-pandemic America, from public health and the impact of technology to the nature of the workforce and beyond. As Eugene and Lane County emerge from the first phase of COVID-19 pandemic, City Club has a unique opportunity to localize this conversation and ask the big questions about what we want in our future. That's why the City Club's theme for the 2021-22 programming is what we call The Next Normal, a focus on how our city and region can reset our intentions and consider choices that lead to better outcomes for all Oregonians. To that end, our season kickoff program is titled The Next Normal, Life in Post-Pandemic Eugene. Our goal is to engage you and everyone in a broad conversation about the vision for Eugene's future in a post-pandemic world. Over the program year, we will follow this forum with a series of additional topic-specific forums, including next week's forum, Flexible, Adaptable, Visible, the future of working from home, and deep dives into the future of public safety, education, the built environment, and more.
Hello, my name is Andrew Kallick. Welcome to the City Club of Eugene. In October 1909, a letter to the editor of the Register Guard titled Eugene's Future Greatness Recognized spoke to the seemingly limitless potential of the then city of 9,000 inhabitants. It read, "The great lumbering industry and fruit and agricultural products added to the greatest educational center in the Northwest, as well as natural beauty and attractiveness as a place of residence, indicate to the far-seeing visitor that Eugene's growth has yet fairly begun. The future of no city could at this time be brighter, and it is only necessary for the people here to continue the campaign of improvement and publicity to double the population of the city in another 3 years." That was over 110 years ago. People then were already imagining what Eugene could be. And we stand at a moment in 2021 in which we are once again imagining what the future of Eugene and our region could be. And that's why we're proud to kick off our City Club season today with a presentation titled The Next Normal, Life in Post-Pandemic Eugene. And we have three phenomenal community leaders here to tell us about what their vision is and how people have conceived of the future long into the past. So we'll have a brief statements from each of them to start. So for now, I'm going to turn it over to Vera Keller, a professor at the University of Oregon. Vera.
Thank you so much, Andrew. It's an honor to join my fellow panelists today in the discussion. I'm afraid my vision of the future is quite a bit darker than the one from 1909 that you read, but we'll get there. So I identified myself as a historian of science and of knowledge, but in fact, what interests me more than anything is the opposite, the history of ignorance. And the future is something we're very ignorant about. We often think that there are many types of knowledge in the world, but we don't often think about how there are also many types of ignorance and ways of not knowing in the world, and that each of these has as much their own history as knowledge does. For example, the period that I study, the 16th and 17th centuries in Europe, was once called by historians the scientific revolution to reflect a huge transformation in the nature of knowledge and a huge amount of discovery of new knowledge. Historians call this time the early modern period, since in general, it is there that we see many features of the modern world developing, including the emergence of modern experimental sciences. And here I'm going to get a little bit into the weeds of my field, but I hope you'll see why I'm doing this by the time I finish these brief comments. What marked these sciences, these big changes in the early modern period, however, was not, as is usually taught, a greater aim for certainty than beforehand, but rather the acceptance of uncertainty, of a certain kind of ignorance. Before this period, science, which in Latin was scientia, had meant absolutely certain knowledge that could be proven logically and had no need of external evidence and did not change over time. So, for example, 1 + 1 = 2, I don't need to do an experiment to know that that's the case. 1 + 1 will always equal 2. Evidence was highly suspect since everyone knew that human experience and the senses were often misled. And experimental sciences relied precisely upon testimony from the senses that we got from experiments. By designing experiments well, promoters of experimental sciences argued that we might aim for the most probable, the most likely knowledge, but it would never be certain. The experimental attitude demanded that we always hold open the possibility that the next experiment or the 10,000th experiment could disprove our probable knowledge. So unlike older ideas of science, experimental science is enmeshed in time. It is both historical, looking at the record of past experiments, and also futuristic, always maintaining the possibility that an experiment might be disproven in the future. And the future, like the very deep past, is one of those times about which we as humans are very ignorant. But my point here is that in modern knowledge, whether in the humanities or in the experimental sciences, we are always wrestling with the unknown to some degree, even about the present world that we live in. In both the humanities and the sciences, we learn to use evidence and reason to make better rather than worse arguments within the very large zone of what might be possible. And we develop the ability to be critical or to assess the quality of the evidence and arguments that others put forward. This transformation of modern knowledge, that is, learning to live with imperfect knowledge that we are always reassessing critically, happened, not coincidentally, I think, with a rise in stability and assurance about the conditions of life for some people. The theory I'm putting forward here is that when we are feeling personally secure is when we are in a frame of mind to get comfortable with uncertainty. When we feel at risk, we cling to the promises of certainty, but those promises are often false. So the pre-modern idea of scientia or science as absolute certainty was developed in a culture that emphasized human weakness, our miserable, short, and unpredictable lives, and our inability to control our circumstances. In that setting, the promise of absolute certainty offered a way out of the human condition, a lifeline to a higher order of knowledge upon which we could rely in a very unsafe world. The modern period, one of increasing urbanism, of confidence in technology, and of various forms of limiting financial risk through joint stock investing and insurance, was a period in which some individuals felt secure enough to get comfortable with uncertainty. However, They did so by offloading risk and danger upon other people. In many ways, they did so through the colonization and enslavement of people, entrapping those people within increased danger in ways that have structurally continued into the present. They also did so through the overpopulating and overdeveloping of the planet. The result is that the recent past, and by that as a historian, I mean the last few hundred years, has historically been a period of incredible security for a small segment of the world's population. Thus, we cannot consider that period of security normal and assume that we will all return to it one day. It was not normal for everyone at the time, and it was not normal in the annals of human history. But furthermore, that period of security for a few was purchased on borrowed time for all, and those loans are coming due. Living on a rapidly changing planet, we will all face increased insecurity in the future. What worries me is that as we experience greater risks, we will become less and less comfortable with uncertainty, and we will search for voices of authority upon which we can lean. That, I think, is dangerous. Although modern forms of critical learning from the humanities to the experimental sciences developed in a system of inequality, they produced powerful intellectual tools for grappling with difficult, complex problems. Now is the time to sharpen our critical abilities and double down on making better rather than worse arguments in situations where the most we can ever expect to know is what is highly likely. What gives me hope is the possibility that increased risk will also mean stronger communities. Along with intellectual doubt, criticism, and uncertainty, another feature of the modern world that developed in the period that I study is individualism. Feeling more secure makes one more able and willing to go it alone rather than to turn to others for mutual aid. However, going it alone, as we have seen through the isolation and depression of many in our country, has not been good for us. The pandemic, I know, has meant increasing isolation for many, but for others, it has also meant increasing reliance upon people from outside of our nuclear households. And here I will give a shout out to my wonderful pandemic pod on whom I rely. So for me, the best of both worlds in confronting our riskier, more uncertain futures would be to pair two tools, one modern, that is critical thinking and mental comfort with complexity and probability, and the other pre-modern, that is community and mutual aid. Eugene, I think, is incredibly well situated to make this pairing work. It has excelled in the past in community solutions, as the National Attention to Cahoots this year, for example, has advertised. It also benefits from the presence of several colleges and universities. I look forward to a future bringing criticism and community together in Eugene. Thanks. Now I will turn it over to Joel.
Great, thanks so much. Hi, my name is Joel Ebo. I'm the founding executive director of the Oregon Just Transition Alliance. The Oregon Just Transition Alliance is an alliance of communities across the state of Oregon advocating for racial, economic, and climate justice. Thanks so much to City Club for once again inviting me to come and speak on such a crucial topic. I've been thinking a lot about this concept of the new normal. And so, as always, you know, I sort of have been ruminating on it the last week or so, and have come up with a few conclusions. Just for framing, normal, of course, everyone knows what normal means, but to break it down even more, it's something that's typical, something that's usual, something that happens day in and day out. And the fact of the matter is that the last 20 years, or rather 30 years of my life that I've been on this planet, have been anything but typical, have been anything but usual. And the rise of technology across the last 30 years with the emergence of social media, the internet, and then of course, as we approach the anniversary of 9/11, our world and particularly our country have faced tremendous change in the last 20 or 30 years. But as always, there are momentous occasions in which we feel that change on a much deeper level. I myself remember very clearly in fifth grade, my teacher talking to us and explaining how she felt when JFK was assassinated. And I, to this day, remember looking at the clock hit 11:59, thinking to myself, am I going to remember this in a few years? And I do. And I imagine the same thing must be going through a lot of kids' minds right now. Today is a special day. It's the first day in which many children across the state of Oregon are going back to school. And I imagine if they themselves are thinking, wow, it's so great back to be back to school, but how strange it is that we're wearing masks again. This global pandemic has completely blown the lid off of many structural problems that we've had in this country for many years. Anywhere from an Oregon in a world that is vastly changing due to unprecedented climate events, anywhere from our cold spells to heat waves to wildfires, trying to protect ourselves and our families from a global pandemic, a new normal has already emerged. I'm sure like many of you, you are now used to getting up and going to your little home office or your setup at the kitchen table to take Zoom meetings. But there are many of us who are still operating in an old way. Many farm workers, forest workers, outdoor workers, and blue-collar folks have to continue to go to work. And so when I think about the future, when I think about what is usual and typical, what will Eugene look like in the future? We have to remember and take a look at what recently happened, which is we just got new census data. So as we continue to try to respond to this global pandemic by making sure everyone is vaccinated, by ensuring the safety of our most vulnerable children, people over the age of 65, people with disabilities, Black, Indigenous, and people of color, it's important to remember that Oregon has not been normal for quite some time. Over the last 10 years, we've seen a massive increase in the amount of Black, Indigenous, and people of color in the state. We went from 71.7% white to now 78.75% white to 71.7% white. Oregon's face is changing. It has been changing. And that has implications for the future. The children who are currently in school K through 12 are now a majority children of color. So what does that mean for the state of Oregon? What does this pandemic, the fact that we have completely changed the way we live life, mean for the future? It means we have an opportunity to do what's called a just transition. And the just transition is based on a unified and place-based set of principles that build economic and political power to shift from an extractive economy to a regenerative one. What does this mean? That means approaching production and consumption cycles holistically and waste-free. The transition itself must be just and equitable. We must redress past harms and create new relationships of power for the future through reparations. It's been often said that this pandemic has us all in the same boat. But the fact of the matter is that this pandemic has some of us sitting in yachts, waiting it out, some of us in little rowboats, and some of us on little pieces of wood like Jack from the Titanic, and some of us have already drowned. My vision for Eugene, my vision for Lane County and for the state of Oregon is a place in which all of us really are in the same boat, where we can build processes and a collective future that takes into account people's histories, what they've had access to and not access to. And this is the perfect opportunity for us to get there. In the midst of this global pandemic, we also have faced very severe and strange climate disasters. Last year's wildfires, this year's wildfires, I'm sure many of you have experiencing smoke, have decimated our country. And so it's important for us to continue to support frontline communities who are feeling the impacts of these climate disasters, of this pandemic, first and worst. It's important that we continue to provide the crucial resources to support those in immediate need, and that we lay the foundation for us to be resilient, both to an ongoing pandemic and future pandemics, but also to a world that is becoming more and more dangerous to live in and exist in. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel. Lily.
Good afternoon. My name is Lily Parker. I am retired, native Eugenian. As I contemplated the new normal, I want to try and keep what I have to say positive. Unfortunately, at this time, it's really hard to see the light at the end of this tunnel. What is our new normal? For almost 2 years, we've been inside. This pandemic has us kind of held prisoners. We live our life as it tells us we can live it. Actually, I want to be honest, I have no problem following the rules because my life has been dedicated to being my brother's keeper. And if I can do anything to ensure that this pandemic is eradicated and we can move forward, I will do that. But unfortunately, beside the pandemic, we have this divided nation, something that is very new to me. Now, understand me, I grew up as a person of color in a country that relegated me as a second-class citizen. So I know what it feels like to be divided. And yet today we're living in a society where it's not down racial lines or religious line or sexual orientation lines, it's down political lines. And so we have fathers and sons with different ideologies, mothers and daughters with different ideologies. We're living in a time to where if you don't put on your own thinking cap and look at the issues we're facing, you can be duped in the traveling down the wrong tunnel. And I think many of us have fallen victim to that. So what is the new norm? The new norm right now is mistrust. We don't trust anybody. And how can we move forward as a society without trust? We look at climate change, and you have the scientists telling us, yes, we are destroying the ecosystem of our planet. And then you have others saying, and I'll be honest, it's my own opinion that those others saying that's not true are those people who are caught up in capitalism. So instead of trying to heal the land, we're trying to extract even more value out of the land with no thought to the people who depend on this land. I am hoping that our new normal will revert back to I am my brother's keeper. I owe it to society to be the best person I can be, to be a role model and a mentor. So we look at climate change. We look at the racial unrest in this country. We look at all the devastating natural disasters we faced even within just the last 2 weeks. We look at the fact that we have an anniversary of 9-1-1, 9-11, and also of Hurricane Katrina coming in the same year in the same month. And we think back to how we came together at those times to support each other. And we look at where we are today. My hope for the future of my community, of my state, of my country is in the young people who are educating themselves on what is real. You see, we can feed into the ideology of mistrust, but at some point, I truly believe that the generations coming behind my generation and maybe the one right behind me will have a clear vision of the infrastructure, the political infrastructure of our country. And they will see that there needs to be some changes. After the conviction in the George Floyd murder, I thought, all right, we're headed forward. We have finally gotten justice for a law enforcement officer taking the life of an African-American man. I saw us moving forward. Then I saw other officers committing that same crime. And I see people denigrating those who have died. Well, the life they live led to, that don't hold water. You look in the prisons and you see they are overflowing with people of color. Some of them for minor offenses. And yet there are those who make money off of those people in prison. And money speaks louder than humanity. You may disagree with me, and that's okay, because then that leaves the door open for us to have conversation. So let me sum up by saying, I see our new normal as being chaotic, at least over the next 5 to 10 years. We will be in a political upheaval. We will have to deal with this pandemic. And if we don't deal with it effectively, we will be dealing with it for the next 5 or 10 years. We have got to open our minds and our hearts to deal with the racial divide in this country. You just can't hide it under a rock. It's not something that people are telling us. It's what we see for ourselves. Just like we saw the insurrection at the White House. And now they're telling us, no, that didn't happen. Those were good patriotic citizens. You can paint the picture any way you want to, but we have eyes and ears of our own. And I hope that in our years of study, we are taught critical thinking so that we can make decisions. I am truly looking forward to the next generation and the generation after that standing up and saying, we do have a new normal. And this new normal includes everybody. Everybody has a place at the table, and everybody have a plate with the same amount of influence served on it. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.